Hey, yo, and here we go. Another episode of We Talk Music is on the air and in your ear. I am the Crown Prince of Charisma, Mo. Once again, I have the Chief Defender of the Faith. He is the King of the Casters. He is Mr. Brett Podcast.
Podcasting time. Ready to go.
Ready to go. Brett, we have an excellent guest.
I'm
very
excited.
Excited to talk to him. Yeah. Please, sir, why don't you introduce her?
All right. Well, let's see. Current project is Trillium. We have Amanda Somerville. How are you doing, Amanda?
Hello, Brett and Bo. Good to see you. Good to hear you. Sorry, yeah. seeing is an overstatement here.
That's true. Well, we're not much to look at, so it's all right.
Well, especially Brett. Especially Brett. Yeah.
I think it's just because I had the video thing in mind, and we just, nixed yes. that. But anyway.
We can already mention to people we've had a few technical issues, so hopefully it won't affect us now that we're going.
Yes. But,
hopefully that's it. So, we're here to talk about your new album.
That's right.
Your new
Fabulous.
Album.
Fabulous.
Trillium, your new album, Tectonic, is that correct? Is that my pronouncing
that right? That is correct.
Tectonic. Yeah, I tend to mispronounce most things. So the fact that I got that correct, I'm feeling good about myself.
Well, yeah, I mean,
good for you.
That is so far her name, Trillium and Tectonic that you've all met that you've managed to say correctly.
Amanda, so I can do. Somerville, I could screw up. Though I do have to say the fact that you call your fans Somervillians, I think is the greatest thing ever.
Well, thank you. Yes, my husband actually used to call me the Summer Villain. And, it just kind of evolved into. I have a problem with the term fan. I don't know. It's weird. Like I'm quite like the family oriented person and fan, I don't know. Fans just sound so, it just sounds so weird and it kind of creates this distance and, also, yeah, makes you sound like you're like on this big pedestal, whatever. So I wanted to give them kind of a little pet name, a family name. And so there you go. Summer Villains. It fits.
Nice. Oh, it's great. It's great. Very clever.
But you are a rock and roll star. So I mean, we can appreciate
you. Maybe I'm a C grade rock and roll star. If there's like B movies, seem I don't know. Anyway, some circles.
You have circles, way more right albums out than we do, so you've got us beat.
Well, I'm a very prolific C star. So there you go.
Well, and who doesn't love a good prolific, prolific singers are great. So let's talk about your first album. Let's talk about Tectonic and what went into it. And
your first album? You made it.
Well, sorry.
latest album.
Latest album, yes. You're confusing me. Stop it. So yes, let's talk about Tectonic, your latest album with Trillium, and what went into it and stuff.
Yeah, this was quite a long time in the making. People have been asking me, what have you been doing in the 7 years? Or why has it taken 7 years to get this second Trillium album out? And the answer is actually a very long one, but I'll shorten it and just say, because I've been doing a shit ton of stuff. doing various tours every year. My goodness, I toured with Alice Cooper and Ian Gillan, and it feels like everyone in between. And did a couple of world tours with Avantasia, released another Kiss Kiss Somerville album, an HDK album, and did numerous guest appearances, formed a new group, Exit Eden, produced, recorded, and released an album with them, and like tons of music videos, which was a crazy undertaking. But it's not like I've just been sitting around twiddling my thumbs waiting for when I was in the mood for writing another Trillium album. So I forgot to mention I got married and had 3 kids also in the meantime. So
but you only had two pregnancies.
This so, is yeah. true. Yeah.
So it's cheating. You're kind of cheating.
I cheated a little bit.
So which is harder, the kids or the album?
Oh, God. yeah. Definitely the kids. Definitely the kids. Oh my. Well, you know, they're amazing. They're such happy little girls, all three of them, and they're healthy. I mean, thank God, you know, it was a little bit touch and go there at the end because I had my twins about 2 months too early and had an emergency C-section, all this crazy stuff. I was hooked up to all kinds of machines for 4 days because my water broke way too soon. And then they had to like give me all kinds of shots and medication and steroids and stuff so that the baby's lungs would develop, you know, so when they finally would come out, they wouldn't be handicapped or something or have to be on breathing machines. So it was really, really quite a hairy situation, but plays into this whole, you know, theme of tectonic, which, you know, has the geological definition, of course, that we know about, you know, the Earth's the plates under the Earth's crust, how they shift and can make crazy, crazy changes and wreak havoc on the world and cause earthquakes and volcanoes to explode and all this stuff and new continents to form. Were the tectonic plates in my life, the undercurrent, you know, in my personal life and everything, they were shifting and changing and causing great upheaval and wonderful changes. But of course, things that you have to really adjust to and get used to and just learn to adapt into the folds of your everyday life and how my you know, how that affects my music and writing and performing and touring and my career, my music career in general. So that's really what this album is about. And moving on to a different place in my life and to all the different things, the changes and everything that I've gone through, that is like the big theme interwoven throughout the songs over the course of the entire album. So that is really what Tectonic is about. And you did, you know, well, you did a wonderful job pronouncing it. Still, I have to give you that one more time.
Yeah, I want to leave out one of the C's. I don't know why. I don't know why. That's my instinct, is to leave out one of those C's. That's actually fascinating. I mean, I was thinking that, you know, motherhood certainly would have changed already your perspective on the world and your songwriting and everything. But furthermore, that experience added on top of being a mother. I mean, I can't imagine that wouldn't affect everything you write afterwards.
Yeah, yeah, certainly. And actually, that's what Full Speed Ahead is about. It's like finding my way back to myself as a musician, as a songwriter and a performer, because around about 8 months, when my first daughter was born, I basically spent that entire time just like writing silly children's songs and lullabies and things like that. So once I needed to, you know, get back into like the serious groove of things, I was like, whoa, oh my God, wow, can I do this? And then it's like, yes, heck yes, I can. And I want to do it. And, you know, I'm just going to move forward. But it was a process of like kind of rediscovering myself and bringing that out of me. It was quite the squeaky wheel, you know, all the gears were kind of rusted and everything to grease back up and to get rolling. But once she was rolling, man, everything was good.
Yeah, you must be the best mother ever, being able to sing lullabies with your voice.
Okay, well, right now we're having like a smooth connection, so okay. It sounds like
Brett, one more time.
So the last thing I heard you say was that, you know, must be great because you can sing the lullabies, and then I lost you.
Okay, well, I said you must be the best mother ever, you know, being able to sing lullabies with your voice.
Aw. Thank you. That's very sweet. I'm sorry. It's like explaining a joke, right? You know, when you have to say the same thing like 3 times and you were giving a compliment. Thank you so much. Oh man, I'm so sorry about this crappy connection.
No problem. Yeah, it's got to be. It does have to be really interesting because you are busy with so many different projects, and then to become a mother and to take time away with your family. I don't think we as fans think about it that much. The kind of sacrifices that you make to have a family or to have a career when you have a family.
Yeah, you very few people think of that. I think the only ones that really, really can understand it are other touring musician mothers, and there aren't a whole lot of us out there. So, because it is different. I mean, I tour with mainly, yeah, pretty much all guys, and most of them have kids, but most of their kids, I think I'm the only one like in Avantasia that has like really, little kids, babies. While Toby's daughter is still pretty young, but it's also different for fathers. I mean, the mom is yeah, I mean, I let's just throw out breastfeeding here, I mean, just
Yes.
like there are just certain things that moms have to do that, are not physiologically possible for the fathers to do. So, I mean, you're missed in a completely different way, and you have this yeah, you have to give up different things and plan completely differently. Like, yeah, it's kind of crazy. So, yeah, not just fans or, people that are just seeing this from the outside, and listening to things, I don't think about that. There's just so much behind the scenes stuff that most people don't really, yeah, can't really fathom. And that's okay, it's not their fault, but it makes it more that much more complicated for me anyway.
Are there certain things then that you kind of have to sacrifice for the album, for instance, in promotion or touring, or even for instance, I know you have three videos out, one music video and two lyric videos. And is it that it's just that much more difficult to find time to shoot a video and that type of thing? Are those type of things have to be sacrificed to some degree?
Yeah, absolutely. I actually filmed the Time to Shine, the video for Time to Shine in the beginning of October, and I was like super pregnant and really miserable, and I told the guys, like, all right, this is gonna be like the one shot, and it's gonna be from boobs up. All right, guys, I don't want to be immortalized, with this giant twin belly here. And yeah, it was funny, it was comical and everything. I kept having to take breaks and go eat something or drink or pee or whatever, all the things that come along with like a giant twin belly. And yeah, and when I was finishing up like the last of the recordings, I think I was really done with the vocals like the beginning of November. And oh my gosh, I've never been more excited and more relieved to have been, to have wrapped up the vocals for an album. Just because I was so terrified I wasn't going to be able to have the breathing room to like sing how I wanted to sing. And I was able to do it, and I was so happy and so relieved. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, I can imagine just trying to push them out of the way a little bit to get a little more air.
Yeah, that was insane. I did some singing at the end of my pregnancy with Lana, but of course, I mean, having one versus two kids in there is definitely a big difference.
Now, I also have a big twin belly, so mine's not going to go away anytime soon. So at least you're able to do that. Like, at least eventually you can have the kids. Me, I don't know. I'd have to change my diet or exercise. Likely neither one's happening.
Yeah, those things suck so bad, don't they?
Oh yes, they absolutely do. So the video did for Time to Shine is actually my favorite track on the album, I think. I really like Eternal Spring a lot, but A Time to Shine, you know, I mean, is an awesome song. And it seems very relevant, and also with the music video, the message of it to this day and age and what's going on in social media and everything. Was that something you were aware of when you were writing the song, or did the music video concept come later, or how is it kind of how did it all come together?
Well, the music video concept, of course, you know, we applied it to various situations and to various, you know, I guess, emotional settings, people, you know, things that people are experiencing and going through. Of course, there's always, you know, my songs are nearly always, at least somewhat, autobiographical. And so this, for me, was, you know, overcoming some things that I had stumbled upon in the music business. There's a lot of, just really dark stuff that can go on. And, it's super competitive and, people aren't always nice. And, you know, too many people, unfortunately, have the viewpoint that, you know, you'll never be successful if you're not a complete asshole. And I so disagree with that. And, I'm so against that, but you know, I've run into that a lot, and you just have to overcome that and ignore it and say, you know what, hey, I'm going to make this happen no matter what, nobody's going to hold me back. But, you know, that's my personal, what I wrote it about in my life, but there are certainly, things that you can take that, you know, would apply to any number of situations. And that's what I love about music. You know, you can take a song and make it your own, and find meaning and, beauty in it for your own self and in your own life. And so that's, what we did exactly with this song and with the video.
I don't think being an asshole just immediately makes you successful. If it did, Brett, wouldn't you have a lot more money?
Oh boy, would I ever. Then I'd be a rich asshole then, instead of just a poor.
Just one of the two. Yeah. I've known Brett since we were 8 years old. Since almost, we're older than you, so that you could tell how long time that is. Or I'm allowed to say whatever I want.
Oh wow, I'm not sure that that's a compliment.
But I'm super excited because we both share March 7th as a birthday.
Oh, hey, fabulous. So, hey, fellow Pisces friend here.
That's right.
Lovely.
That's one of the first things I saw when we were going through and doing research. I'm like, March 7th, awesome. That's finally somebody else good on March 7th that was born.
What are there crappy people on March 7th?
I just don't think there's many interesting people on March 7th. I'm sure there's perfectly interesting, but
I think that's not really fair. I got Julia Roberts on my birthday. I'd rather have you, Amanda.
Oh wow, laying on the charm.
Ah, we tried.
You've got him as your
heterosexual life partner. You can say it.
Yes, I was refraining. I was searching here the thesaurus of my brain for a different word for partner. But there you go. And I was almost gonna say sidekick, and then I thought, oh God, no, I don't know. Maybe you would take offense to, you know, kind of being called something akin to Robin. I don't know.
Oh, you should see him in short pants. It's embarrassing. It doesn't look good at all. Anyways, but yeah, no, I did. I do have a bat suit with the nipples and everything. Sorry.
That's all right.
Sometimes I forget.
It's
I'm
wonderful
not
to get off track. No,
I'm not great. Supposed to be the one here performing. So you grew up in Flushing, Michigan, near Flint. So what? Tell us about that kind of that part of the world, and that town, and how that that influences, you know, you and your personality and your music. What, tell us about Flint in that area.
Oh, wow. Well, Flint has gotten a really bad rap, of course, especially in the last couple of decades. And a lot of bad stuff has gone down there. Just very recently with the water crisis and things. It was a wonderful place to grow up. Flushing is just a little suburb, very small town, beautiful. The state of Michigan is gorgeous. People talk about, you know, nature in Canada. You guys are up in Canada, right?
That's right.
Correct.
I mean, we're right on the border there. So, I mean, it's very, very similar to Ontario, and lots of nature and the lakes and everything. So it was a wonderful place to grow up. But just a couple miles down the road was where Flint started, and it's really rough. So you have this giant contrast with a lot of like middle class, you know, very, very clean, very white bread America kind of stuff. And then you just cross a little, you know, city limit, and there's a lot of poverty and just a very, very different culture and very different vibe. And so I kind of grew up with these two stark contrasts. My mom grew up in the city of Flint and had some very rough experiences. And so she was happy that I was able to grow up in a different setting. Her family was really, really poor, and just a lot of violence in the neighborhood where she grew up. So and where I grew up was really peaceful, just a few miles away. So it's kind of crazy to have that stark contrast. And so I've kind of been used to contrasting worlds, different environments and coming in and out. And it kind of fits the entire theme of my life and career, because I've been bouncing back and forth between Europe and the States for almost 20 years now. And it never ceases to amaze me how you can be in one spot, you know, and then a relatively short time, even if I fly home to Michigan or whatever, and then you're in a completely different environment. And that has continued into my adult life. It's just, you know, the distance has gotten more and some different languages have been thrown into the mix.
It's I think from the outsider, you know, we look at kind of that area and Flint and that thing, and we think blue collar, you know, hard rocking town. But obviously, there's obviously the blue collar, you know, Motown in Michigan also. So, I mean, I imagine musically there was just a lot of different vibes and a lot of different things that would open up your mind as you were growing up.
Yeah, for sure. There were tons of musicians. There's a lot of music over there anyway. I think in Canada and the States, it's very similar. Lots of talented people. Growing up just a short distance away from like Motown and where a lot of legendary music was made, that kind of carries on, you know, throughout a giant radius, I guess, around Detroit. And Detroit Rock City hasn't been Detroit Rock City for a long time, but there was a lot of history that was made there, and the echoes of that remain. So people in Michigan are really into all different types of music, and I grew up in a musical family. And my dad is a singer-songwriter, a folk singer-songwriter. My mom was in like marching bands and stuff, and she loved Black Sabbath and Jimi Hendrix and Pink Floyd. So you know, I kind of grew up with a whole huge mix, eclectic mix of musical tastes. And my grandmother, she taught me how to read music and how to play the piano and everything. She's a classical singer and pianist. So, and my great uncle, he played for Sammy Davis Jr. In Las Vegas. So, yeah, just really, really lots of, you know, hootenannies and everything when I was growing up. And so music was really a way of life, you know, a big part of my life. There was never a time where I thought like, hey, I want to be a musician. No, that's what I always wanted to be. It was just like a natural for me, you know, it just came as naturally as breathing. So, yeah. And I think growing up in that environment had a huge, bit to do with that.
So my questions here. Is there any shows that you saw when you were young, you know, that you realize now, maybe you didn't even realize it then, but is there any shows that you got to see when you were, you know, younger and you went, wow, that really influenced me, or you knew it influenced you and maybe you did or maybe you didn't?
Yeah, sure. Oh, goodness. My parents took me to quite a few concerts when I was younger, but they were let's see, who did I see? I know seeing John Denver, that was a big one for me. I was really little. I think I was maybe 3. And, you know, just seeing him on stage and hearing him play to all these people and tell the stories and how the music just unfolded in its own way and captivated everyone, you know, that was for me like, wow, that is exactly what I want to be doing, you know, and I might have even been 2, I'm not sure, but and I saw like the Mamas and Papas and of course, when it was after Cass had been gone, but I saw Madonna when I was pretty young. That was a big deal because the show was so racy. it wasn't the Blonde Ambition, but I think it was the Girly Show or the Girly Tour, the Girly Show Tour. Anyway, so that was really cool. I was a big Madonna fan growing up. So yeah, of course, seeing all of the people performing and, my mom and dad loved to go out to Vegas. They went out to Vegas like every few months and they would actually even take me sometimes and, they would take me to shows because like that was the thing, obviously, you know, you can't gamble with a kid or whatever. So they took me to a lot of shows and that was a big eye opener for me too, to see like, holy moly, the real show aspect, not just playing music to people, you know? So yeah, that was, yeah, hugely influential for me as well.
I feel like I asked you something you hadn't thought about for a while that
I'm sorry. I'm like digging out of my treasure chest of memories here, dusting off the cobwebs.
That's okay.
That's good. Conversation pieces.
Going back to the album, the artwork on the album, is that your ideas or do you have a lot of influence in the look of the album cover and that type of, I'm glad that this one's not as scary as the first Trillian album. frankly, that was fucking frightening. I don't know how they managed to make somebody so charming and lovely so scary, but you did. But yeah, this one, do you have a lot of input? Is that a big deal for you?
Yeah, it is. It is. And I worked with the same artist, Stefan Heilemann, as I did with Alloy. And I'm a big fan of his work. He does a lot of really amazing collage work and everything. And we go through, you know, I explain to him the concept of the album and the songs and everything and what I want to say with the visual concept. And so we work together, which is really nice. And I think, you know, he's also said that it's nice when the artist has an idea of what they want, because some people come to him and are like, well, man, I don't know, you know, just do something that looks cool. And so, yeah, it's fun to collaborate in that way as well, because I think, of course, the audio aspect is the main focus. And then you have to have a great visual presentation. You know, I mean, the eye plays a big factor in it as well. And describing to him like what I described to you with the concept of tectonic and also the multiple meanings of tectonic. And in German, they have a wonderful definition of it as well in the arts. It has to do with sculptures and also in architecture. It's like the putting together various parts to form a complete structure, and like the art of creating a new structure. So he had the idea to do something a little, you know, having to do with sculpturing and texture and things like that. So you see that kind of thematically in the rest of the artwork. And then there's the one that looks like I'm a wizard, like a magic stick, a wand, a magic stick. Did I just say magic stick? Yeah, I've been in Germanic speaking countries for way too long. Yeah, a wand, a magical wand. No, I'm supposed to be like conducting an orchestra of like moving, you know, rocks and earth and whatever, like tectonic, right? I'm like the moving the tectonic plates of, you know, my anyway, whatever. No, and then my daughter says, you know, sees those pictures like, ooh, mama, bibbidi bobbidi boo. And I was like, yeah, okay, yeah, I get, yeah, okay, shit.
That's awesome.
The only reason why she didn't say Expelliarmus or something is because she hadn't seen Harry Potter yet.
Yeah, that'll be the next one. So it does have a little bit of that Harry Potter feel to it, though.
Tiny bit, yes, I know. Oh my gosh. No, but it's, you know, he also built in into the artwork just like some trillium flowers. From Alloy, where I had taken these trillium flowers and I had spray painted them silver to make them look like they were, you know, like metallic kind of flowers anyway. And he also incorporated them. I wanted them incorporated into this artwork. And the last album, it's really important, like all my solo stuff also has my handwriting. All of the song titles and everything are my own handwriting. And so it's important for me, to me, that is also incorporated into the Trillium artwork. And he did a great job doing that as well. So I've always been kind of a hand, I don't know, you know, I only write lyrics on paper, like, and I have like fancy paper and I collect different kinds of pens and everything. I'm a nerd like that, and I cannot write songs or anything digitally. It just doesn't work for me, so I have to have that, like, you know, real organic, like, handwritten stuff. And so I like to incorporate that into my album artwork as well. So yeah, I do have a big, you know, influence on the artwork as well. I'm a little bit of a control freak, I guess, in that respect. I'm not one who says like, oh, well, I don't care, whatever, just do however you think. Nah.
Yeah, because I noticed that this one is Amanda Somerville's Trillium, as opposed to the Alloy album, which is just a Trillium album. So.
Right. Yeah. I made the mistake. We all made the mistake. Like the record company and I did it, and Sandra didn't think of it, whatever. But, you know, I'm Trillium was treated as a newcomer, as like this new band, whatever. And I'm like, nah, I'm not a newcomer, you know? And it's like, yeah, but it doesn't have your name anywhere on it. So, and then a lot of people, when I was on tour or whatever, they're like, oh my God, that's you. Okay, I know you from whatever, you know, Epica, Camelot, Avantasia, Ina, all this stuff. And, but I had no idea that this was your band. And then I'm like, ugh, you know, face palming it, thinking like, okay, well, for the next album, we'll incorporate my name into things. So that's very clear. This is my band, my project.
But it does say, though, at least your Wikipedia lists that you have a solo album coming out, Conformity Challenged. I know you're working on that. Is that the title that we're going to have? Because I think that's a spectacular title.
Thank you. Yes, that is going to be the title. When it is finally, when it's finally done.
You got to get it right.
On it for a long, long time. And just everything, you know, kind of jumps in its path, like, and takes priority. And now I've made peace with the idea that it's just going to get done when it gets done. But my last solo album, Windows, came out in 2008. And so, yeah, it's been 10 years. And it'll be done at some point. And yes, it'll be called Conformity Challenged, because I am.
No, it's excellent. And if it's like Windows, then it's going to have that different. You get to, in this album, scratch a different itch, so to speak.
Yes, yes, for sure. You know, a lot of people have, they're aware that I don't come from a metal background. That's not the place musically, anyway, from whence I came. and it's not that I have completely changed over to metal. I've just added it, I guess, to the spectrum of who I am as a musician and as a person. I have definitely been much more involved in metal music and the metal scene and in the metal genre in the last 10, 15 years. But I haven't left everything else behind, you know, from my folk, pop, rock, alternative, singer-songwriter, whatever roots. And so that album will definitely have a lot more on it, like it was on Windows, but it's also going to be a really, really eclectic mix of things, because that's just who I am as a musician.
Does that mean you have to keep your husband Sander away and just be like, no, you're going to metalize this. You cannot metalize this. Don't touch.
It might be. It might be.
He's like, yes. Oh, come on. This needs a little metal to it. Come
just
on.
A little extra guitar.
Yeah, I'll tell you something that I haven't told anyone.
Oh, love it.
Yes, yes. So you get an exclusive little tidbit here. He hated Eternal Spring. Did not want it on the album. Hated it with a passion, and kept trying to convince me to kick it off the album. And I'm like, no, damn it. I want it on the album, and it's gonna go on there. And he's like, oh, it's such a pussy song. So, I mean, seriously, he is like the metal child of metal children. The guy is just, yeah, I try to soften him up, but it doesn't really work.
That's great.
I, like I say, that's probably my second favorite song on the album.
So. I'm like, yeah, you know, metal fans will like it. They love, look at how they go crazy over Farewell, you know, Avantasia's Farewell. I'm like, come on. Every metalhead has a soft spot. He's like, not me. Like, yes, every metal fan except for you.
Oh, that's
Nocturne is my favorite on the album, actually.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, that is actually the only song that I took that was from a completely different source. My friend Ashley Peacock from my hometown in Flint, Michigan. He's like, hey, I've been working on this song and it's just acoustic guitar and my vocals for right now, but take a listen and tell me what you think. And I loved it. And so, you know, Sandra and I wrote a bridge to it, and we changed some things here and there. And then, of course, Sandra completely meddled it up. put the modulation in there, you know, starting in the second verse. And but it's so different, you know, because it came as just like this kind of rough demo from my friend. And then we took it from there and made it what you hear on the album. And it's so many textures, and it's such a rich song that I think stands out. And I'm so happy, you know, I was able to like kind of sandwich it in the middle there, and be able to collaborate with Ashley again, because it's been many, many years since we did anything together musically. And we used to play together, oh my gosh, when we were 18, we did all kinds of stuff together. So it was great to be able to involve him and have a song like that on the album as well.
Well, that's it certainly deserves listening to multiple times, I find, you know, to get those different elements.
Cool. Well, thanks. I'll pass it along as well.
I understand there's also another Exit Eden album to come. Is that true?
Yes, that's true. We are working on that right now.
Okay, well, there you go. You are never getting done your solo, but that's okay, because Exit Eden, is it going to be kind of this? Look, we've been writing a graphic novel, the two of us, for, I think, 400 years. So we understand. You just got to get it right.
Yes.
You got to get it right. So
that sounds great.
400, it's not about 400 years. It's just taking us 400 years. It's about a band, actually. But
okay.
But what was I going to say? Exit Eden. is it going to be the same concept? Is it going to be taking existing songs and kind of giving them a symphonic metal edge? Is it that same idea this time?
Yeah. We're continuing with that. We're going to change it up a little bit, but it's going to be more of that. I'm working on a song right now. And maybe the song will be on the album. We're thinking of throwing in a couple of originals this time. So, we'll see. But, we have a short list of songs, from which we're trying to choose, you know, the final list from for doing which covers we want to do, and so that's coming along.
So the first album, Rhapsody in Black, it was the songs were chosen for you ahead of time. Is that correct?
Right.
So this time you're obviously going to have a lot more influence as the you know, you and Anna Clement.
Other talented people.
Clementine, Marina. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Clementine, I don't know why that name always screws me up. I knew somebody with that name and I still couldn't pronounce it. Clem is good. Let's just go with that.
Yes.
But you guys obviously are going to have a lot more influence then in the picking of the songs. And I'm just curious about kind of that process then. I know for me, the first album, Heaven, probably because we are Canadian, that was my favorite one. And probably because, you know, I'm a million years old instead of a young lady such as yourself. I was a young lady at one point, but let's not go there. I kind of like that, you know, Heaven and Total Eclipse of the Heart and these older songs is kind of where I fit. Now, if you could do Heaven by Warrant on this one and match that up, that would be the greatest thing ever. I'm just going to make that request.
Okay, all right. I'll put it in the idea pool.
Yes, that'd be so cool. Oh, you guys could do an incredible version. But yeah, what is the process then of picking the songs out?
Well, this time around, we had an idea board, we were just kind of throwing ideas out there. And every time that I would think of something, I would, you know, I would put it on our. I don't know if you're familiar with Trello, but anyway, we have different idea boards and stuff, and it's an online thing that you can go and add to it, and then everybody sees it. So that's kind of cool, especially since we all live kind of far away from each other. And, then you get a little bloop, you know, Marina La Torraca added an idea to the board or whatever. And so you check that out, and then we talk about it, you know, we have a Skype call or whatever. And, so that's kind of how, we've been doing it this time around. Now, we're kind of going through a bit of a restructure. I can't really talk about it so much, but it's going to be a little bit different this time around on the business end. So, and it's an exciting change. It's a very exciting change. So we're looking forward to seeing what that will bring. And of course, though, the powers that be also have ideas. So we'll see what the choices end up being in the end.
Okay. That was cryptic, but interesting.
I know. I'm trying so hard to say something without saying it. So I should be good at that because I'm blonde, but nah.
It's a skill. You get it.
And because you're blonde, that's why you're cheering for Denmark in the World Cup. That's correct?
Yes.
Yes, yeah, I thought so. Yeah.
For this
that's
hour,
the right answer.
Totally cheering for Denmark.
That's the right answer.
I'm interested, Amanda, in how what it's like to write with Sander then.
Oh, it's really, really a treat because Sander and I, we started out as musical colleagues. The whole romantic aspect came way, way later. So we were like colleagues and really, really good friends for many, many years. And then so being that that's where we came from, we work really well together. And we're good at bouncing ideas off of each other. And I think if it was kind of different, you might really get on each other's nerves. But we are pretty diplomatic in how we bring ideas or criticism or changes, put changes out there on the table. We have a lot of fun together because we were friends so many years. We don't take things nor ourselves personally or seriously.
Do you have a home-based studio?
Pardon?
Do you have a home-based studio that you guys?
We do. We have two. We're really fortunate that, we have one in our home and, just about a quarter of a mile away, there's the Rock Station where Sander has his music school and his big studio. So it's nice to be able to go down when the kids are sleeping and work on things. And it's also nice to be able to say, okay, I'm going to work for 6 hours. I will be gone, and then you're really out of the house and you can go to the Rock Station. So, that has been really a blessing and a big help, to have both of those.
Yeah, I can imagine. And now when you moved across to Germany and the Netherlands, when was that in your life?
I moved to Germany in 99. Before we even got into the 2000s, oh my God, and they still had the Deutschmark, I feel really old right now.
Oh, you're not. We are. Yeah. You're not.
That's us. Yeah.
Well, I was really young to say to yeah, in my defense, to make that a little bit better, but yeah, anyway. I moved to the Netherlands in 2010. So, and now we're moving back to Germany, just across the border. So like we're in the Netherlands, though, we're right on the border to Germany. And, I've had a place there this whole time and everything. And Sandra and I just bought a new house, in Germany. So we're going back across the border, but, it's been wonderful being able to, live right at the border and get the best of both worlds. And then going back home every few months and everything, it's never boring. And it's a great source of inspiration.
I want to make a joke about unprotected borders right now, but it's not the time.
That's, That's all right.
You're an American citizen seeing all that craziness going on from across in Europe. I can only imagine what's going through your mind.
I was one of the first lines of defense against Canada. Hey, I was a border child growing up as well.
Yeah, that's right.
Us terrible, terrifying Canadians.
Yeah.
Rawr.
You might have, if we had attacked, you might have been able to fight us off with a Sharpie.
just hand us a few pairs of shoes, we'll go away.
you also work as a vocal coach, is that correct?
I used to. I don't do that so much anymore. I only did it like in the studio when it was part of a production that was going on. Okay. It was something I kind of got into like by happenstance, and then I word of mouth got around, and apparently people liked what I was doing in the studio, and then several other bands asked me to help them out. But I get a lot of requests for like vocal lessons or whatever, and I don't do that. And I've gotten kind of away from the vocal coaching aspect, because even though I learned a lot and it was really fun, I met a great number of people, it's not creative work, and it's not really what I want to be doing. And it's also difficult, because you end up kind of doing a lot of work that is unintended. So I did a lot of songwriting for other bands where, oh, really? You know, then you get to the point where it's like, hey, you know, actually, I wrote three verses. So actually I should be named as an author. And then they're like, what? Wait, no, you were just like helping us out. Yeah, that's not just helping out.
Not quite the way it works.
Right. So I've kind of gotten away from doing that so much. But yes, I did do quite a bit of it in the past.
You know, I was just going to ask, and the reason why is because we had a conversation with Brian Vollmer. He's the lead singer of Helix, which I don't know if you know, because they're right across the border, Canadian rock band. Yeah. And he's a vocal coach, and is in operatic range as well. And learning or listening to him talk and tell us about how much it has saved his own voice to do that, the things that he learned and things that he passes on, and what he considers to be important to pass on to people to maximize the voice, not only for ability, but also for over the years to save it and make it, you know, so these, because the voice is something if you don't treat it right, you can lose it, can't you?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. You can screw up your voice and screw up your ears quite easily, and you don't want to do either one if you want to maintain your musicianship.
So what is it, if you were to give advice to a young singer that way, just kind of, you know, on maintaining your voice and the proper techniques, what would you tell them?
Oh, goodness. Well, I'm not into the technical side of things, really. I more work on, kind of dramatics and expression, and for native English speakers, which I've worked with, you know, a lot over here, pronunciation and things. But I would say if it hurts, you need to figure out something else, because singing is not supposed to hurt, and you can test your boundaries and kind of push your limits and everything, but it shouldn't hurt. And a lot of people make that mistake where, you know, their voices will become very tired very quickly. And then, you know, you're doing something wrong, and then you should really, seek professional help, because then you don't want to do that. I would say that's the general rule, as you can always discover more about your voice. It never ceases to amaze me. I mean, I learned a whole lot about my voice again with this album, and this was the most challenging thing by far for me to sing in my entire career, and not just because I was pregnant, and because one of the songs was about a friend of mine who committed suicide, and it was the hardest thing ever to sing. That was Fatal Mistake, by the way. But you can always learn new things about your voice and what you can do with it, and that's a great thing. And never think that you know you've been there, done that, know everything that there is to know, because if you allow yourself to be open to that, you know, then you'll allow yourself to also be pleasantly surprised here and there.
You've given us an awful lot of time. I have just one or two more. I don't know about you, Brett. Is that all right, Amanda?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. We're okay.
I'm sorry. I know I'm very long-winded. So.
Oh, no. No.
It depends
good.
On whether or not you guys have the time.
Oh, no. Yeah. We can go. That's for sure.
It's 3 in the afternoon here.
Oh, hey. Well, the day is young.
And we'd have really nothing going on in our lives. So, you know. Brett, did you have anything else you wanted to ask here before I...
Well, I was actually interested, because I know in a lot of your photo shoots and stuff like that, you get to wear these really awesome costumes and stuff like that. So, now, is that something that you wear onto stage, or is it like because you definitely seem to have that style? So I'm interested in that.
Are you referring to like the Exit Eden costumes?
Well, Eden, and even on your website, I can see the. You know, the top up photo, you know, with all, I don't know much about fashion, but I'm interested in the fact that you.
Oh, you should see what he's wearing right now. It's terrible.
Oh yeah. Well, it's like it was my little girl's dream. Let's say, I was always dressing up, you know, playing dress up, being, you know, I was Cinderella or Snow White or Madonna or whatever, you know. So it's always been really fun for me to get all dressed up and to parade around and sing in front of the mirror or whatever. And it's great that I can incorporate that into my career. So. You know, every day, I mean, you'll never see me in like sweatpants and no makeup or whatever, you know, out and about. But for my everyday life, you know, I'm pretty low key, I would say. So I especially enjoy the ritual of, you know, that comes along with a photo shoot and a video shoot and live performing. Doing the makeup and getting dressed up and, you know, having crazy accessories and stuff. That is just so much fun. And, of course, it's a big part of, of the visual aspect of performing and, doing all this stuff. And so I take great pleasure in picking things out, and when things are picked out for me also, like with Exit Eden, you know, we worked with a designer, a Spanish designer, and she presented us with a lot of different pieces, and it was like, ooh, wow, oh, ah, ooh, you know, lots of oohs and ahs going on from me when we were opening the packages. So that is a big fun aspect of it for me, and I love doing it.
All right. Well, why don't you jump in there, Mo?
Okay. The genre of music, of course, in this album, Trillium Tectonic, Amanda Somerville's Trillium Tectonic. I'm trying to get it right. This genre is not that this genre has never broken mainstream with a female lead singer in North America, but it is quite rare. Why do you think that is? And do you have any theories on how to kind of, you know, unlock that key to the North American, North American listening to this sound?
I really don't know. Of course, the avenues by which you can, you know, reach people these days are certainly more plentiful than they were like 10 years ago. But mainstream radio is still not friendly with the distorted guitars so much. And especially when it, you know, when there's like bombast added to it, when there's all these, you know, symphonic elements and things. I don't know. I guess the people that control the radio waves think that it is just not something that mainstream audiences would enjoy. But, you know, they're never even given the chance, I guess, to find out for themselves. And a lot of people, you know, have told me, because I don't come from this, this background. So like my original fans, if you will, you know, they're more the mainstream, like softer, like pop rock singer-songwriter kind of fans. And a lot of them have told me like, wow, I never would have thought that I would like this music, but I love it. You know, it gives me a lot of energy and positive feeling. And, you know, I don't know, it just makes me feel like screaming out, you know, sometimes. And it's cool. It's awesome, man. So, I really couldn't tell you what needs to be changed in order for this type of music to reach a broader audience. I think they're definitely trying with projects like bands like Exit Eden, right? This is kind of the brainchild. Of course, I kind of formed things, you know, with the members and the producers and I actually named the band and everything, but the founders were part of a big entertainment corporation, and the guy who was head of this particular German company, he's a big metal fan, and so he, like, it was kind of his dream to bring this to a mainstream audience. And that's kind of how Exit Eden started out. So, you know, there are those people that come along and have that idea and want it to gain a greater audience. But you have to have a crazy person in a really high position willing to invest, you know, put their career on the line and invest a ton of money and promote the heck out of it in order to do that. And there just, you know, aren't that many people out there in the industry that are willing to do that, apparently.
Interesting. And my final question then is, if you were to write a song for somebody you know who you've never written a song for, or maybe somebody you admire and you don't know and you wanted to write a song about them or for them, or maybe both, who would they be?
Oh, my goodness.
That's why I saved it to the last.
Yeah. Can you hear the gears turning in my brain?
Yeah. I'll probably... Like
they're working real hard.
Well, it's late there, and probably have to get, I'm sure your babies will get you up early, so I'm sorry.
Wow.
And when you end up writing this song now, I'm going to need credit, because, you know.
Well, there's somebody, I guess, there's an artist that I really admire and that I think is fabulous. And that would be really cool to collaborate with her at some point. But have you ever heard of Emily Autumn?
No, no, I'm afraid not.
Ah, you got to look her up. Emily with an IE at the end.
All right.
And Autumn, like the season. Mm-hmm. But she's really cool. I've seen her live a couple of times, and she's quite a treat. So I would, it would be fun to do something for her, or even, you know, collaborate with her on something. So there you go.
Oh wow, she's got a crazy look.
And yeah. I'll make a comment that so obviously she calls her fans plague rats, but that's. That's quite a bit different than Summer Villains, I'll suggest.
Yes. Although, hey, there's villain in the name. Come on now.
Yeah, oh yeah, for sure. But Plague Rat, just say it.
Yeah, yeah.
Very
she
interesting.
She looks very cool.
She's pretty hardcore. But she's a total do-it-yourselfer. And... you know, she writes everything, she produces everything, she plays everything, she comes up with the whole concept of her shows, and which are quite elaborate live events. And so I have like the utmost admiration for her because I know exactly what it's like, and she's really carved a place for herself in the scene, and I think she's done an amazing job, and she's like a huge talent, and I really like what she does.
That's great. Okay, well, this is the end then of the show. This is a little part we like to play here for a little thing we like to do. I guess that's the way to put it. It's our tradition on our show.
Yeah, you make it
on
the sound We like Talk we're going to start acting or something.
No. It's our gift to the listeners and you. It's a little segment we like to call Plug Your Shit.
Okay.
So please go ahead. Tell everybody.
Oh, plug my shit. My shit. Okay. Then, geez, here I am. I'm waiting for you to say something. And then
no,
okay,
that's it. That's
me.
All of it.
Haven't
it's
I
all
just been plugging
you.
My shit the entire time? Isn't that all that I've been doing?
Yeah, but one last time. Where do they go? How do they get it? Why do they want it?
All right. So, yes. I have so many things that have come out and that are coming, but this is about my Trillium Tectonic album. And if you want to have all the information, all the links and everything, please go to my Facebook page, which is Amanda Somerville Official. That's facebook.com/ Amanda Somerville Official or amandasomerville.com. There's a lot of information there as well. And it's out on, you know, we've got physical CDs, we've got vinyl, we've got all the digital stuff. And yeah, is that what you wanted? Is that the kind of plug?
Sounds brilliant.
Yes, that's exactly
brilliant.
It.
That's what we need. Oh, everybody needs
goodness.
To go out there and get it. Go out there and get your stuff.
No doubt.
And thank you so much. Hey, whoever's listening to whoever's gotten this far, seriously, kudos to you. If you don't already have the album, then wow.
With you, yeah,
yeah.
If I may say so, I'm so excited because it's the first time in my entire career I've landed in the Billboard charts. I got a mail from the record label last week saying congratulations, you're number 78 on the Billboard charts for a newcomer and. I think like 175 or something for independent albums, which, hey, it's the top 200, but holy shit, in my whole, you know, in my home country, my native country, it's really exciting for me to see, the American fans like standing up and yeah, coming to the plate. So let's get some more Canadians out there.
Yeah,
there you go. Yeah. You truly are an overnight sensation.
And yeah, we're looking forward to your tour of Canada. And I'm looking forward to the Exit Eden, Warrant Heaven music video, all this stuff that we've set up for you. You're welcome.
All of that stuff. All of that. Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
I'll tell you what. We'll work on getting Emily Autumn on. We'll just totally suggest that that she should call you and set something up, and then...
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, it'll be great.
If we do that, we're going to expect at least a ticket to get see it.
For sure. Well, thanks, Brett and Mo. It's been wonderful talking to you. And Oh, by the way, you know what? Like, going back to when we had technical difficulties and you were talking about the lullaby.
Yes.
Really funny story, really quickly before I go.
Please, we love funny stories.
My daughter Lana, for a long, long time, I would come in and, you know, I was singing her lullabies and everything. And all of a sudden she said, like, "No, Mama, I don't want you to sing. I want Dada to sing." So Dada needed to come in. And my husband is not a singer, right? He has a wonderful voice. I love everything about the man, of course. But he would be the first to tell you he's not exactly a singer. But she wanted him to sing, the Frère Jacques, they have the Dutch version, Father Jacob. It's because she's like, "No, Dada needs to sing me Father Jacob." I'm like, "Well, okay then."
Fine, be that way.
So totally, her musician singer mother totally dismissed there, and for her metal child Dada to sing Father Jacob.
It only gets worse, you know. I mean,
Did you record it?
Well, so anyway, there you go. The C-grade rock star mom, needs to be dismissed. And
you made Billboard. You're not C-grade anymore.
That's right. Yeah. You're A-grade in our eyes.
So. Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, well, thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for coming on. I think all we need to do is get a Go Denmark from you, and we're good.
Go Denmark.
Love it. Well, we truly hope that that we can help you sell 2 million copies of Tectonic, and you've been a wonderful guest, and we hope that you have the best of success in the future, Amanda.
Thank you so much, you guys. It's been fun.
Awesome. I do hope we get a chance to talk to you again in the future. So this was
me too. Me too. I really appreciate the interest and the attention, guys. I very much do. Thank you. Thank you so much.
All right. Have a good night.
You too. Take care.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.